good. So feel free to throw questions at me along the way. I really don't mind that. Like George said, I'm really interested in security. Almost all of my work is either directly or indirectly related to the BSDs. I use pretty much only OpenBSD machines. All the work that I'm going to be talking about here was done on OpenBSD machines and tested on OpenBSD machines. But the concepts, the higher level concepts, are really more interesting or are applicable across just about every operating system. So even hopefully the Apple people will be finding some of this interesting. And it's really, this specific talk is more going to be of interest to all of you, I think, as administrators rather than specifically as BSD junkies, I guess.
Alright.
So, with that in mind, I'll get into some of the details of Arachne. Alright, so the motivation for this work here is that security policies are really key to how we deal with any network, but they're especially important in large networks. But they fail in several places, and I'll get into some of the details of what the problems are shortly, but basically, they're broken. And what I want to do with this work is describe a new way of thinking about access control, about security policies in large networks, to deal with some of the issues that I see. So in the rest of the talk, well, I'll give a very, very brief, probably too brief, a background on the state of access control on security policies. Then I'll describe where I see problems in that arena. What I'm then going to do is talk about some of the details in the design space in terms of, okay, here are the problems. How do we solve it? What kinds of programs are going to solve these issues? So I'm not going to describe specific solutions. I'm just going to talk about sort of the types of solutions we might want to look at. Then I'll get into my specific solution, the one that I implement. Okay, so, well, security policies have really been around since, you know, pretty much since the beginning of computers, since computers were first shared, I guess. But the work was really formalized by Lamson in the 70s when he basically made a mathematical model of access control. And the model that he described was what we would now call the gatekeeper model. And the metaphor that you can kind of keep in your mind is like in the old World War II movies where the general's car pulls up to the little sentry hut with the bar across the road. And the sentry comes out, and he looks at the general, and he looks at the general's ID, and he consults his list, and if the general's on the list, he says, okay, you can go in, and he raises the bar. Right? He opens the gate. That's pretty much the standard model for how things have been since Lamson first formalized it back in the 70s. The key point here, or a key point here, is that after the sentry makes his decision, he's essentially inactive from then on. He has control over the sort of what's going on around him for that one instant where he decides whether to open and close the gate. Once he's decided to open it, he no longer has any control. The decision has been made. He's committed. That list that the sentry holds, the list of who's allowed, pretty much standard now, we call that the access control list. Right? That's the list of who's allowed access. More recently, probably in the last 5-10 years, probably closer to 5 years, it started to become clear that access control lists don't necessarily scale to the really big networks, and especially in distributed situations. Access control lists aren't always the best solution. So what we see occasionally nowadays is role-based access control. I don't really want to get into the details of that. It really doesn't matter as far as this talk is concerned. But suffice it to say, the problems I'm going to describe really apply whether you're doing RBAC or ACLs. Satiris Unidas disapproves, really don't matter. Basically, this last bullet point is essentially some proof to say, hey, some of the stuff I'm going to be describing later on, it really works. or at least it's feasible. Okay, so this is sort of a stylized e-commerce site. And I hope you'll agree with me that this is a fairly reasonable network for some kind of medium-sized e-commerce network. Up on the north end, we've got, well, first of all, we have lots of replication. Everything is duplicated. On the north end of things, we've got a reverse proxy load balancers that sort of protects the web servers in the middle, trying to keep some of the load off the web servers. Got a bunch of replicated web servers, and behind them are a number of databases. So these would be, say, you know, the customer database, the product list, what have you. Now, this is relatively a simple network, but it's complicated enough that for the problems that I'm going to be describing, I want to simplify it down just to make it easier to talk about the problems. So I'm going to simplify this. I'm going to take away all the replication, and I'm also going to, as far as we're concerned, the reverse proxy load balancers up there, really all they're doing is they're preventing any traffic that's not on port 80 and port 443 from getting to the web servers. So as far as we're concerned, we can just call those firewalls, at least in terms of the specific access control issues that we're dealing with. So with that in mind, I'm going to collapse everything down into a much simpler network. And now I'm going to start describing problems with this, but I hope that you'll agree with me that the problems I describe here are going to apply just as well and probably even more so to the larger network. So, okay, we have the internet, we have a firewall, we have a web server, we have a database. Access control in this network is pretty straightforward. A request comes in off the internet, so you want to load the product listing web page of the e-commerce site. Your request hits the firewall, and the firewall has to decide, hey, am I going to open the gate or not? So it checks its access control list, it checks the RBAC table, whatever. It makes the access control decision. It says, okay, I'll let you through. Your request now passes on to the, with the firewall, the access control list is typically just going to be the firewall rule set, right? Does your request actually obey the rule set? Now your request moves on to the web server. The web server checks its access control mechanism, probably the HT access file, maybe some kind of application level deal. If you're allowed, you get passed on to database does something else, maybe the grant tables get checked. If each gate along the way opens, then your request gets passed back out to you out on the internet somewhere. Straightforward, very simple. This is really how things have been done since, you know, the beginning of time. Well, what's wrong with that? Why, you know, what's the problem? Well, I actually see a number of problems. The first problem is this. Some bad guy out on the internet makes a request, gets passed through to the firewall, so the request is okay up to this point, hits the web server, and then when he tries to hit the database, maybe he uses the wrong password or something, and the connection dies, right? He can't get any further. The database says, you know, I'm not going to open the gate for you. The problem here is that that's really the only response possible in this situation, given the current state of technology. There are lots of things out there in terms of in the research community, there are lots of different responses that are possible. But in terms of the current state of these various applications, really the only thing is we're just not going to open the gate. We're just going to cut you. We're going to cut you off. So, what might it be nice to do? Well, wouldn't it be cool if, in that situation where the password failed, what if we could just raise the log level? Hey, this guy did something a little bit bad. It's not blatantly horrible. We don't need to kick him out of the network altogether. But let's keep an eye on him. Why don't we just raise the log level? It'd be cool if we could do that. We don't really have a mechanism for enabling that. Other options, maybe, what if we could redirect this guy into a honeypot, a network that looks just like ours, but he can do whatever he wants, and he's not going to damage our databases or what have you. We could redirect to an instrumented network. What I mean here is one of these the self-healing networks that are all the rage these days, at least in terms of the research community. So a network that has all kinds of sensors on it, trying to figure out what's going on and hopefully healing if bad things happening. Or even in the most extreme case, what if we could take snapshots and revert our network back when something bad happens? So these are all possible. There's technology for implementing all of these, but there's no way to connect that to the current access control system. That's problem number one. Problem number two is this, and this is a little bit subtle, but so now the bad guy is on the wrong side of the firewall. Somehow he got onto our internal network. So maybe he came through an open wireless network, or maybe he's an insider and he's got access to some machine inside our building. So he hits the web server and then goes on to the database, and he can go do whatever he wants. And this is wrong, right? This is not behavior that our network should be allowing. We as the administrators of this network don't want this kind of behavior. But the problem is that if you look at each item, each node in this network, they've all made the correct decision. The firewall saw no traffic, so, well, no traffic means no decision, that's correct behavior. The database saw a request come in from the web server, says, well, okay, you know, fine, I'll handle you correctly. The web server, it has no way of knowing whether or not the firewall vetted the traffic that's arriving at its left-hand interface. It has to assume that the traffic that arrived at the firewall is correct. So each one of these things made the correct decision locally, but we've still got this globally incorrect result. Okay? Now, one last problem. So this problem, the bad guy is back out in the internet somewhere. Connects all the way through, hits our database, and does something bad at the database. So let's say in this scenario, he's tried to delete a big table or something. He's tried to delete, you know, the customer list, something important. The database detects it, says, unacceptable. I'm kicking you out. I'm closing the gate. Well, that's great, but the web server doesn't know that that happened, and the firewall doesn't know that that happened. So remember, in the real world, these are probably going to be replicated. There are lots of other databases. So now the bad guy just moves on to the next database and attacks that. The key issue here is that the firewall and the web server might have found it useful information to know that, hey, the database just kicked this guy out. And if they knew that, they might want to reevaluate the decisions that they made to allow the bad guy in the first place. So in the old scenario, the gate opens or closes, the decision is made once at the very beginning. What I'm saying now is we need to change that. Those gates need to be constantly reevaluated. We might need to close them at any time over the duration of this session, of this guy's connection into our network. Right. We need to dynamically reevaluate. Okay, so my work from here is, or at least in terms of the rest of this talk, is going to be in two parts. So the first part is talking about when you recognize this problem, or these series of problems, it really opens up a new way of looking at access control on a large network. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that as a field, as a design space. I'm going to move through that a little bit quickly because I don't think it's as interesting. And then in the second part, I'll talk about the specific prototype that I've built to address these problems. So right now I'm talking about the field, not the specific implementation. And what I want to do right here is describe a model for any system that's going to try and solve these problems. So there are initially two parts. There's your network as it exists right now. And then there's the policy as which describes how you really want that network to behave in a global sense rather than in the local sense that we've been dealing with up till now. So that policy needs two things. It needs to find out what's going on in the network, and then it needs a way to enact changes in the network, to enforce the policy decisions that it makes. So to find out what's going on in the network, it needs essentially eyeballs, sensors to look at the network and say, hey, what's going on out there? Collect that information, transform it into some easily understandable format and send it off to the policy. So I call that format events, the each thing that happens in the network detected by a sensor, sent to the policy, we call those events. When the policy makes decisions and it wants to change the behavior in the network, it uses actuators. So think of the sensors as the eyes and the actuators as the arms. So the actuator is the thing that redirects a session to a honeypot, something like that. And just to give you some examples, a sensor might be an intrusion detection system. So an IDS watches what's going on in the network, makes reasonably intelligent decisions or interpretations of that behavior, translates it into an event, sends it off to the policy. Policy could do lots of things. One of the things maybe it could do is call the administrator if something really bad is happening. All right, so I've got a number of slides which talk about specific questions in the design space now, and I'm going to skip over some because some questions I think are more interesting than others. All right, what is a sensor? And again, what I'm saying is anybody who's going to solve these problems is going to have some equivalent to these various components. So if you're going to write a program to solve this problem, you're going to need some way of pulling information off the network. I'm calling that a sensor. If you go out and implement it, what decisions are you going to have to make about it? Well, two of the major questions are these sensors going to be specific little programs scattered around the network, or are we going to somehow modify applications? Do we put the sensors on completely separate machines, sort of isolate them so they can't be affected by the security of the rest of the network, things like that. Which events are important? This is a tough question because it's not necessarily easy to define an event. It's not necessarily easy to define exactly what might be interesting to the policy because each individual function call taking place in each application in our network might be something that the policy would be interested in. Each instruction might be interesting in the most extreme case. Somehow we have to limit that, presumably, if our policy is not some kind of super policy that can deal with enormous volumes of events. So somehow we need to filter out exactly which events are important. How do we do that? Not clear. Even once we've filtered the events, we'll probably want to instill some sort of top-down organization on them to make it easier for the policy to deal with them. What is the correct organization? Well, one possibility is one monolithic database. All events get dumped into there. Every field in the database is a column or row in the various tables in the database. That'd be great in terms of doing all kinds of cool searches from the policy standpoint. You could do all kinds of things like, let's find every event relating to connections to a particular port. And that would tell you, hey, is somebody probing me on port 80? Let's link all the port 80s with specific IP address. All kinds of very cool things like that. May not scale too well, though, in really big networks. So maybe then we need to decentralize some kind of blackboard, something like that. All right, boring. This is a tough one. This is a little bit of a tough question. If we have this higher level policy, like in the figure that I had up there a minute ago, and we also have each of the various applications which already have their built-in policy mechanisms, how do they interact? What happens when the higher level policy makes a decision that contradicts the decision made locally? So this would be the case where, say, the web server has allowed something through. The global policy receives an event indicating that happened, checks its policy and says, hey, wait, I don't want that. You need to reverse that decision. From a coding standpoint, how do you do that? How do you go in and tell Apache, hey, undo that access that you just allowed, right? Undo, basically you're in trouble there. So there's an interaction that is tough and somehow you have to deal with. One option would be, well, let's just ignore all the local decisions. So that would mean let's just turn off all of the local access control systems. Turn off your firewall. Turn off Apache's AC access. Turn off your database manager. Right. I don't think I would do that personally. You could do that if you want to. The other end of the extreme would be always defer to the local decisions. always, whenever there's a disagreement between the global and the local, go with the local. And then the third case is some kind of mishmash between. Sometimes we'll go this way, sometimes we'll go that way. All of these are sort of tough to implement. And again, in the second part, we'll see the actual decisions that I made here. I'm just trying to show you that there's a lot of different directions to go here, and it's not necessarily clear from the offset what the right direction is. Okay, well, surface going up and down, that's kind of boring. This is another tough area here. Really, the only ways of abstracting the policies the only means that we have in our hands right now are access control lists and role-based access control. There's some sort of more interesting things off in the distance, but these are really the only things that are out there in the real world as far as I know. It turns out that for this system, neither one of these will work. And I'm just trying to think whether I want to get into the details of why. If you're interested in why they won't work, why don't you come up and talk to me afterwards, because it's kind of a messy thing, basically. One option that I see for replacing them is behavior-based access control. So in behavior-based access control, we'll just watch what you're doing, and we'll maintain a value which scores how well behaved you are. If you behave nicely, you'll have a high score, and we'll continue to allow you access to various things. If you start doing bad things, we're going to start knocking points off your score. The lower your score is, the less access you have. So we're calling that behavior-based. We're not the first ones to propose behavior-based, but this is a very different way of applying it. Okay, I basically just said all this. Boring. Okay. Once the policy makes a decision, how does it interact with the real network? Well, it needs arms somehow. It needs to poke out into the real network in some fashion. I'm calling those actuators abstractly. In reality, what are those going to be? Well, they could be scripts. They could be, maybe the policy has encoded in it exactly how to redirect sessions to new, to honey nets, things like that. Who knows? All right, enough about the sort of abstract stuff. Let's talk about the prototype, what I actually built. What I built is called Arachne. And the idea, the picture that I have in my head is, so Arachne is from Greek mythology. She was a seamstress, had a competition with Athena having to do with weaving, was turned into a spider. That's where arachnid, arachnophobia, spider. And I picture this system like a spider, lots of legs poking down into the network, poking and prodding everywhere, watching what's going on. So Arachne has five major components, really six. It's got sensors, which you probably already have some idea what they are. Actuators down at the bottom, those are pretty straightforward. Then it's got principles, which I'll talk about in a second. It has an event database, and that's what does the organization of the events. That's how we keep track of what's going on in the network. And as part of that is a session database. And the session database, I'll get to that in a minute, and then the policy engine, which actually enacts the decisions that are being made here. So when you plug all that together, you get essentially a very similar picture to the model that I had up earlier. The main difference here is that I put the principles down at the bottom. Principles are us. Principles are the people using the network. They're the ones sending requests in. They're also the administrators, the users of the network, the endpoints, essentially, of these connections coming in. When the requests come into the network does stuff. The sensors notice that, they observe it, they convert it into an understandable format called events, they send it up, they get stored in the event database, they also get stored in the session database. The policy engine observes the contents of these databases, and based on the values, based on what it sees there, it changes the behavior of the network internally. Now it turns out, because of the behavior-based policy system that I'm using, the policy engine, really all it has to do is look at the scores for the various things that are occurring in the database, and based on the score ranges of the scores, just turn on actuators. So the policy engine ends up being very simple here. So in Arachne, a sensor is just a small program. Lots of them, they're very easy to write. I scatter them all over my networks. And each sensor is customized for the specific application that it's observing. So a sensor for Apache is customized to understand, essentially, what Apache is doing. It reads the log files, it turns out. That's how it sees what's going on. It's customized to parse the log files, see, hey, what did you allow, what did you disallow. It's also, all right, I'll talk about principles in a second. It's also customized to know specifically what principles mean for a particular application. The other thing is, remember I mentioned that filtering out the events, we need somehow to keep the volume of events down wherever possible. And for different applications, a particular event may have different levels of importance. So say for, like, say a wiki application, a failed password attempt, a failed login attempt probably isn't all that important in your wiki. But a failed password on your main backend database, that's probably something you want to look into. So even though from an abstract point of view, they're both just password failures, one is a much more significant event than the other. So we need to encode that somehow, and the way that I encode that is in the sensors. The sensor for each application knows what the important events are for that particular application. So the database sensor knows, hey, failed passwords, that's important. The wiki sensor doesn't care about those so much. Principles are a little bit tough because in just about every other system out there that deals with this sort of thing, principles are basically fixed in that a principle is one type. It's a key, it's a IP, it's what have you. But for my system, I really need to deal with sort of arbitrary principles. And the way I handle that is with the sensors. Each sensor essentially is customized to recognize the principles for the particular application that it's observing. So for a firewall, a principle is an IP address. Right? Firewalls deal with IP addresses. They don't know what usernames and passwords are. They don't care. Whereas applications don't necessarily know what IP addresses are. They care about username and password. So the sensors are customized. The event database for Arachne is just a MySQL database. It just stores everything in the database. Everything gets dumped in there. This obviously does not scale well in terms of actually deploying in very large networks, but the limitation here is that I have to graduate, and so some parts of the network are put on the back burner compared to other parts of the network. Yeah. It really has to be distributed, and I think the correct thing to do there is a distributed blackboard, a pub-sub system, something where you can essentially just tack more on as you scale up, tack more machines on it and expand the space. Something like a DHT, like Cord, any of these things would work. Anything but one monolithic system like I have here. All right, now this is where the magic comes in. So there's the event database, which stores everything. But from the point of view of the policy, there are all these things coming in. Hey, a connection arrived at the firewall. Hey, somebody just tried to load a file from the web server. Hey, another connection at the firewall. Hey, something over there. The policy doesn't know which of these are related. And remember, that's a key thing back from the earlier slide of reevaluation. Yeah, this slide. Something bad happened at the database. The firewall needs to know that in this situation. And in the current state of the world, there's no way of communicating that information. But it's not just that the firewall needs to know something bad happened at the database. The firewall needs to know, hey, something bad happened at the database that's related to this guy and this connection here and this stuff here. It needs to know this whole red line, right? We need to encode that session. And this is another picture just to show that same example. Somehow we need to link all these things together so that when the bad thing happens at the database, we can link it all the way back through so each entity knows not just, hey, something abstractly, something bad happened to the database. Something bad happened to the database and it's this connection coming in on this port as far as you're concerned and you need to reevaluate your decision there. So the formal definition for a session, it's a graph, and I mean that in the mathematical sense, a graph where the vertices are the events, and then the edges are causality links between them. Meaning, this event caused this event, caused this event, caused that event. And I have an example just to show you. So the database is what stores these graphs, linking what's been taking place in the network. And the key is to answer this question here. When you detect that something bad happens, you want to link it to which applications and which machines are related to that particular bad event. So just a quick example here. So a request comes in, and this is still that same toy network from before, where you've got the firewall, the web server, and the database. So a request comes in, and it hits the firewall. So as far as the sensor on the firewall is concerned, it sees two things. It sees, hey, a new principal has arrived, so it's going to generate an event indicating, hey, I see a new principal with some IP address, because remember, firewalls only know IPs, they don't care about anything else. And it also generates an event indicating, hey, somebody just tried to enter the firewall. That same sensor is going to link them together, so it generates a third event, which is a linkage event, telling the session database, hey, these two things are related. So in the session database, it builds a graph connecting those two events together. Now, that same connection leaves the firewall onto the internal network. The same firewall sensor, in Arachne anyway, it might be different in other systems, but in Arachne, the same firewall sensor announces, okay, the connection has now left the firewall onto the internal network, and that is linked to the entry event that I sent out a minute ago, so now you can link those two things together. Now it hits the web server. The web server sensor says, hey, somebody just tried to read something. It also says, hey, that's linked to the firewall exit event that you saw a minute ago. Okay, so maybe now it needs to read something off a file server, so the file server is going to generate an auth and a read. Those all get linked in. Then the web server passes it on to the database, which does an auth and a read. And now it's done, and there will be, okay, now this is complete events, and so the session gets torn down, it gets built up, and then as it completes, it gets torn back down, yeah. So I'm using session probably with a different meaning from what you're used to, I think. When I say session, I mean when somebody touches my network, the very first time that they just barely hit the edge of my network, everything that happens as a result of that, I'm calling the session for that particular connection. So in this case, somebody obviously wanted to get a web page. They wanted to read a web page with some dynamic content. So the session is everything that happens starting with their request arriving until their request is complete and I'm done dealing with it. Right, so in this case, yes, again, I probably should, instead of HTTP read, HTTP get. So all of that is a session. This is different from like a TCP session. It's not the same. Okay, so I'm building sessions. As things are coming in, I'm building up sessions, I'm tearing sessions down. I also need to be doing policy decisions. So this is where the behavior-based scoring thing that I talked about earlier comes in. Every principal gets a score. So every time a new principal arrives, they also get assigned a score. So a new arrival, they start with a score of 100. 100 is the max score that you can have. And as you misbehave, I deduct from that score. Most events, or the way you get deducted is by causing an event to be generated that has a value, and that value gets deducted from your score. So most events are okay. They're not bad. They don't hurt your network. So they have a score of 0. But if you do something bad, if you try and, you know, if your auth fails for whatever reason, your password is bad or something, or you try and delete a, you know, RM star or something, that might generate an event with a large value, and that will be deducted from your score. So here's an example of a session where principal connects. Initially, they have a score of 100. They hit the firewall. So you have to imagine this being built up over time. So this event gets generated, then this, then the linkage, then this, then the linkage, then this, then the linkage. So up till now, everything is OK. But now let's say the password for logging on to the file server,
whatever application is going on here. Let's say the password failed. You typed in the wrong password. So you get 5 deducted from your score. So now your score is 95. You try again, you fail again. Minus 5 again, now you're down to 90. Now you get it right, okay. And then you can get passed on to your data. So the idea here is that your score is, or
the idea is that we need to link the auth failures on the file server with the specific principle. And the linkage takes place through the session. And then we trigger actuators based on your score. So your score changes. Hey, you're below 100. We need to raise the login, say. So that triggers the login. Yeah. A session can be unbounded. So the question was, what are the bounds of a session?
Yep.
Well, the bounds of the session are the duration of your interaction with the network. The bounds of your session. So you connect to my network. As long as you remain connected, I will have a session for you. When you disconnect, I will tear the session down. And again, this is probably confusing because session, as I'm using it, is probably slightly different from what you're used to. Well, right, the key here is that we need to cross as many layers as we can. Right? We need to sort of slice this way through the layers. And we need to trace as things are taking place, as they move up into the application layer and then back down to the network layer, we need to track all of that because anything taking place in a lower layer, that could have ramifications for something in a higher layer. For Arachne, the lowest layer that I deal with is layer 2, yes. You will not see any events generated from anything below layer 2. But from a theoretical standpoint, there's no reason why you couldn't go below that. And so in terms of future research, I would like to see that. Yes. For specifically layer 2, timeouts on IP addresses are typically how I loop it. I tried to keep this simple, but maybe it would have been more interesting if you actually had to log on to the web server, if there had been an HD access file in place here on the web server. There would have been a new principle linked in with the username and password that you typed into this particular web server, so that there would actually be multiple principles linked to this session. And conceptually, they're really the same principle in the sense that it's you on one computer out here, right? But one is an application layer principle, and the other is, in this case, a network layer, right? So they're different principles, and the application knows about one, but not necessarily about the other. So we use the session to link them all together. Is there another question over there? No? Okay. All right, so with that infrastructure in place, the policy engine ends up being very simple. You just have all your actuators in place, all the things that you want to do on your network, things like redirecting to honeypots, changing the log level, whatever, reverting, whatever crazy thing you can come up with. You assign ranges of scores for triggering the various actuators. So, hey, if your score is between 85 and 95, that means I want to raise the log level on you. So I pass your session structure to the actuator for raising the log level on all the machines that you're connected through. That actuator takes the session structure. It knows exactly which machines it needs to go to. It goes to them and says, hey, log level up. And that's the actuators. OK. So that's it. That's Arachne. It's Well, I didn't talk about the interaction between them, but essentially it overrides it. It lets the local decision happen, and then if it changes its mind later, the actuator just comes in and closes the door. That is what it boils down to. We get the asynchronous reevaluation exactly like I described, because now things are, you know, we're allowed to change things on the firewall based on something that took place on the database. And because we have actuators, we can just plug in whatever actuators we want. We can enact whatever responses we're not. We're not stuck back to the simple open-close gate scenario that we were in before. Okay, so it's a big problem. Look, I've tried to solve it. Yeah? So the question is, how is this different from like an IPS? Well, it's similar to some IPSs. I guess it depends on which IPS you're asking about specifically. I guess I can answer abstractly. There's several different ways to come at this. First of all, this really does try and slice across all of the various layers in the stack, from the network layer up, and to make connections across them, which IPSs aren't necessarily doing. The other thing is, by plugging in actuators, that it's a slightly different approach from IPSs, because IPSs are typically, it's hard to trust an IPS, essentially. At least in the current state of the world, I certainly don't trust any to let them just go out and run in terms of enacting responses. This, hopefully, a little more trustworthy because it's not quite so. It doesn't necessarily depend on chances, I guess is one way of putting it. Let me put it another way. What we can do here is we can escalate the response. So an IPS essentially either it triggers or it doesn't. We have some measure of this is slightly bad, so we're going to trigger this actuator. Okay, now you've behaved a little bit worse, so we're going to trigger the next more strict actuator, and then so on. So which is really how sort of real physical security systems work. As your behavior, you know, you enter a secure building, and as long as you're in the okay part, you're okay. You start to edge toward a secure door, and maybe the guard looks at you a little bit warily, right, and so on. You get an escalating response. You try and actually key in now the guard comes at you with a gun, right? You get the escalating response there. So it's a little bit of a parallel with real world security. Yeah.
So do you see this more of an operating system level or a network operating system level, or is it a snap-on application? How do you see it?
Well, it's most useful in larger networks, I believe. At least for the moment, the current state of what I have is really most useful for larger networks. I see it as, first of all, deeper into your system it can get, the better. So, you know, going all the way down to layer one would be awesome. So incorporating it into the operating system is key. It really needs to be, there needs to be a sensor at every layer. There needs to be a sensor on the network links. There needs to be a sensor. Well, no, there doesn't need to be, but the more sensors you have, the more useful the system will be. So everywhere you can put a sensor, great. It's most useful in network scenarios. I guess I could imagine a scenario where you could have one machine and you could deploy it. Actually, even with one machine, it would be okay. But I think large networks is really the goal here. Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough problem, and I left.
What's the problem? Scaling?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, the question was, I guess, two parts. First of all, how well does it scale? And then second of all, how do you know that it's working, essentially? How do you know that it's behaving correctly? So in terms of scalability of Arachne, really the limiting factor, I believe, and I haven't run the test yet to find out, Arachne is in a state of flux right now. I haven't actually run the volume up on generating events to really see what's going to happen, but I believe that the limiting factor is that central database, which is why I was talking earlier about if I had more time, I would distribute that central database. Okay, so from that standpoint, the standpoint of scaling policies and correctness from that standpoint, I left a part of this talk out because it's kind of, it's ugly, it's math related, and I don't find it all that interesting myself. And if you're interested, I can give you a paper that I've got that talks about the details. But basically what we do is we isolate sessions and policies for dealing with those sessions. We encapsulate them so that I call them atomic sessions, so that we get little packages of session plus policy for dealing with that type of session. So you add a new machine to your network, say you just had a firewall and a web server, and so connections look like that. So you would write, that's what a session should look like, essentially. And you can almost do the picture in your head. A session should have this shape on my network. And if I see a session that does not have this shape, something bad happens. Right. So what I can do is encapsulate this shape, and I'm speaking informally here, with policies for dealing with this specific shape as one atomic component, and then have sort of outline policies for dealing with, hey, if something goes wrong, here are sort of catch-all policies for dealing with outside shape. So now I come along and I add another, I add the wiki software running on there, so I need another link for the wiki software. So now I have a new shaped session running in my system. I write a policy component specifically for that shape of the session. So it's really sort of component-wise. You just add little new chunks in as you scale up. So it's not like, you don't have to think abstractly about everything when you're writing the policy. You do it in little chunks.
I mean, the more components you have, the more policies you have.
Yes. As your network gets bigger, you have to have more policy to deal with that. And sure, I guess you can see that as a problem, but that's really no different from how, you know, every network, you add a new machine, you got to add policy to deal with it. You add new software, you got to add policy. So it would be cool if we could limit that, but to my knowledge, there's really no way of going about that. Yeah. Well, as far as I'm concerned, so the question is, what directions am I thinking in terms of level one?
Yeah.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, that's really a pipe dream. I mean, there's no way that I'm going to get to that in my research. But things taking place anywhere could have an effect. So things taking place on the physical layer could be a problem. So if somebody plugs in a wireless access point, we'd like to detect that, right? And there are ways of detecting that from a hardware standpoint, right? And right, if you can get your little doohickey that you can plug in and detect that, if that can have a sensor on it that talks this language, then now my system knows about it and can handle it. And it's seamless and clean, it just plugs in, it's another sensor. So when you say appliance, you mean like a sort of a box that you can't get into? And well, in that case, you may be out of luck. If you can't get into it and put a sensor to read what's going on in there, it depends on what exact kind of access you have to it. In the worst case, you just put a machine out in front of it that watches the traffic going in and out of it and generates events based on whatever interpretation you can glean. You'll probably have to custom write that particular sensor. For both of these, I've already written the sensor. I've written the PF sensor. I've written the HTTP sensor. This, you know, the Google web search box, I haven't written that particular sensor, but I can imagine putting another machine in front of it just to sniff the wire, figure out what's going on, and generate the corresponding event. That would be the worst case. The ideal case is everybody loves my system, and everybody starts writing their applications to automatically speak the event language and generate the appropriate code. So that would be ideal if Google just started spitting out the events themselves. Something else?
Sure.
This is my thesis, so as far as I'm concerned, this is my future. I see a future for the area. I mean, I really do think that these are fundamental problems, and they're finally now within our grasp to solve them. I don't think we really could have solved these problems, say, 5 or 10 years ago, maybe even a couple years ago. So it's finally possible to solve them. Whether Arachne specifically is the implementation to solve it, I'd like to think yes, but I think I'm limited in terms of just because there are a lot of places where I'm writing the code and I'm thinking, man, if I were doing this for real, I wouldn't do this. But I have to graduate, so I'm going to do this. So Arachne may not be the perfect solution, but I think that this arena has a place for a solution like this. Arachne is really just a proof of concept. It's to say, hey, look, it really is possible to do this. Now somebody go off and do it for real. Yeah. Not yet. Yeah, wheels are turning. Anything else? Yeah. Okay, so the question was, do we allow cycles, and how do we compare sessions? So there's a couple different kinds. Well, I think when you say cycle, you mean actually a cycle in the graph.
Right.
That's not possible, because graphs are being built up over time. And so this is actually it's a tree, essentially. It has to be a tree, because and time is moving that way, essentially. So for there to be a cycle, time will have had to have gone backwards. There's another type of cycle that would be possible, which would be, what if something happens in this session which triggers an actuator which changes something in the network, which generates an event, which changes somebody's score, which triggers an actuator, which, right, you can get into a loop that way. So that is theoretically a possible cycle. And it is a problem, and it's something that you have to watch out for. The way that I deal with it in Arachne is using that atomic encapsulation that I talked about before. An actuator can only act on a single session. So an actuator one session can't trigger an actuator that would affect another session elsewhere. So in the worst case, one session could go horribly wrong, right? One session could trigger an actuator that affects the session and go back and forth. So one atomic session could go nuts and crash, but it won't affect the other sessions elsewhere.
Yeah.
So you want to know actually how the events generate, or how sensors generate? Okay, so he wants an example of
building a session. So I kind of, that was what's going on here, but maybe I'll just run through it again in a little more detail. Oh, the actual code? Okay.
So when a connection arrives at the firewall, the firewall dumps a connection arrive in, so this is PS, everything I'm doing is on OpenBSD, this is PS here. So PS dumps to the log file, hey, this package just arrived. Right? My program parses the log file, or actually it talks to whatever it is, dev, PS log, pulls that information out and says, okay, first of all, is this a principal I've seen before? You know, checks a local cache of recently seen principles. If it's a new one, it generates a little XML blob, condenser in XML, and sends that off to the policy engine, to the policy database. It generates a second event indicating, hey, a TCP SIM just arrived. That's the equivalent here. TCP SIM just arrived, so I'm going to generate an XML blob that says, hey, new connection, new session. It also generates a linkage event. So each of these events has an ID, a nonce, and it links those two. So it generates a third event
here,
which says, hey, event number 773211 is linked to event number 119233. All three events arrive at the session database, and now it can start building the graph. So, okay, this is a node, this is a node, this is an edge between the nodes. Then the next event, okay, now the firewall. So I actually have two firewalls right here, one in HR1 and one in HR1. This is just lazy. So this is now a connection leaving the other interface. Same deal, okay, I link. And again, now we're at the web server. The web server sensor parses the log file there. Says, okay, I just got an HTTP GET, so now I need to generate an XML blob. Yeah.
Not to
get
too many degrees, but how does the HTTP event know that the
so how does this link right here specifically get generated?
Yeah, the link. How does it know that?
I have a specific sensor for detecting. So I have a sensor that looks for connections coming in. So for these sensors, for all the network layer sensors, I have to run PF just so that I can dump everything to a file. So that machine is also running PF, so it sees the connection coming in, right? So locally, there's one of these events gets generated, but I don't actually send it off. That sensor generates it internally, but doesn't send it off because it knows, because it is a sensor specifically for linking incoming PF to HTTPD, right? So it sees, okay, something just came in on port 80. I better wait because I'm expecting to see a GET here in a second. Then it sees the GET, and now it tags it up.
So it's exactly what you said before. It's your sensor specific to the
GET. Right. And I mean, you could theoretically just write the sensor for the specific, for the firewall, or for the web server, as a sort of kind of hand wave and say, yeah, this is probably linked, and generate essentially a probabilistic linkage here. But I did it the hard way. I probably should have done it the lazy way. So, yeah. Yeah, that's a problem, and that's why I'm not sure that Arachne is the way to go in the long term. I think that this needs to be distributed. Right now, this is all on one machine, so if you have lots of sessions, you're not necessarily going to scale anymore. That's why there's no reason why this couldn't be done on a DHC, where your all your end nodes would be buckets in the DHT. So you could do that if I was in software. You could do that. I just haven't done it myself.
It's actually not, I mean, I don't think it's that far-fetched, because if you think about when you're sitting there going through, like, if you're manually going through the log, you're going, huh, I wonder what happened in 10-12, and you see such and such IP is sitting there, you know, trying to log in, failed logging, then you go back and see the success from the same IP, and then you look back earlier and there's some fat Nmap coming from that same IP. I mean, I don't mean to oversimplify it, but it's still the same concept. I mean, that's not crazy to think that in terms of figuring out a scalable solution, you could actually put something together. I want to actually say something else, though, because using words, funny words, like session but not a TCP session, sensor but not a sensor, but it's actually funny because, and then you're saying, you know, layer one stuff. I mean, what's wrong with them? We had a joke at DEFCON, we kept talking about layer zero, because we blew the electricity in the room, but, you know, what about actually integrating? Are you talking about these sort of BIOS-CCL stuff and you know, SNMP and physical layer stuff? You know, because, I mean, not that like, well, this guy didn't map me or they have a failed log and a MySQL box and then my box overheated. I mean, I'm not looking for a crazy correlation like that, but I can't think of an example where it would matter. But
well, this is part of our thinking in doing this was thinking along this direction where, I mean, this is sort of the field of security where some new thing gets developed and or some new layer or some new component or some new whatever gets developed, and so everybody rushes to secure it. And where the flaws almost always are in the interactions between that new thing and whatever else was out there, right? It's always in between the layers. It's always on the edges and the cracks, right? Nobody ever wants to crack through the hardest part, right? They always want to find the easiest part. So there may be a come a time where coming at it through the hardware is going to be how the bad guys are going to do it. And we've already seen some attacks along those lines in terms of, we'll get to that, but it's possible. So it's something that we should at least be thinking about.
It's all hypercritical.
Sure. Yeah, it's all hypercritical. So we should at least be thinking about it, and it would be nice if our systems are set up to handle securing that type of stuff when the time comes. This kind of fits into that, or at least it allows things to be plugged in to deal with that if we do need to.
Even thinking like, I mean, this is again being hypothetical, but even thinking like, you know, running Etherage and watching TCP connections, right? If somewhere you're able to visualize it, I mean, everybody loves like what the ideal NOC would look like if you've never been in a NOC. You know, with like, you know, big screen, where you're actually seeing a list of you know, all the failed connections that are taking place and where, and actually the route, right? I think, again, I'm being really, I'll never get to Columbia, but if I was, this is what I would do. But actually seeing that and actually watching, you know, the connections happening and where they're coming from. So, I mean, if you sit there and the people are visualizing and also you have that link and that parsing out, you know, and you're actually going, well, we know it's coming from this one IP, you know, it's green or whatever, you know. I actually think there's a whole layer of areas you can go with this in a NOC scenario particularly. The problem is there's all the false positives. Right? That's it's just it seems overwhelming to me. It's almost like you were talking about a storm before an IDF. And it's like, you know, actually worry about your patches, then worry about your syslog, then worry about IDS. You know, when you have like all that stuff covered, then you should play. But ideally I think in a large level scenario this would be, you know, a nice extra little jump. You can see the same remote IP trying to hit an internal, you know, MySQL log repeatedly. You know, this would be a great way to visualize that.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the problem when it comes to NOCs, right, is there's a ton of information out there. It's just how do you interpret it? How do you present it to yourself in a way that is useful? So this might be that way or a way. Sure. Yeah, I really haven't thought about that actually. My thinking with it is a sort of corporate network, contained local network, but there's really no reason why you couldn't plug this thing on some kind of overlay network.
because you can't really do a circular one. History is like what you're saying. So eventually, there's going to be something in the midst there that you can appear in a lower kind of case, but you just don't have a column.
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, every time you're active, there's another sphere, and you see another sphere, you see another sphere for your column, and you know you're wrong.
For the session? So you're talking in a peer to peer network, peers active, and connecting with another peer to peer network? No, even if there are cycles in the peers, it's still okay, because remember that this is governed by time, not by space. Right? So you can put a cycle there. No, again, you have to move backwards in time for there to be a cycle. I don't think I'm understanding what you're saying. Let's talk about that. You good? Cool. Thank you.